Welcome to the deep dive. All right, ready to jump into a time machine. This time we're going back to the 1980s.
Oh, okay.
Big hair, shoulder pads.
Leg warmers.
Yeah, all that. But also some pretty intense legal battles, apparently.
Oh, interesting.
We're looking at a partnership dispute from a law firm, so I think Mad Men.
Okay.
But with more legal jargon and a whole lot more paperwork.
Gotcha. So less cocktails, more contracts.
You could say that, yeah. Okay. But this one, this one actually delves into some pretty personal struggles, too.
Okay.
We're going to be looking at a senior partner at this firm.
All right.
A guy named Gerald Lawless, and how his alcoholism impacted his career and ultimately his partnership at this firm.
Now, that's interesting. And especially back then. I mean, yeah. Alcoholism wasn't something people talked about openly, right?
Exactly. It's very hush-hush.
Yeah.
And it makes this case even more layered and complicated, I think.
Definitely adds another dimension to it.
Yeah. So we've got some juicy legal documents to dig through. We're talking partnership agreements, meeting minutes, even court records.
Ooh, the good stuff. We're like legal detectives here.
I like that, yeah. We're going to be sifting through all this evidence to piece together what really went down.
I love it. So it's not just a dry contract dispute. It's a story.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's about personal struggles, professional obligations, and maybe even how the legal world was changing back then.
All in the backdrop of the 80s. Awesome.
So let's get into it. We've got Gerald Lawless, senior partner at this firm called Keitlinger & Gray.
Okay.
And he is struggling with alcoholism.
Right.
Which, like we said, was a huge EE taboo back then.
Really tough. So how did the firm even approach that, I mean?
Yeah, how do you even
deal with that as a business?
Right. Well, it seems like they were trying to walk a fine line.
Okay.
Between, you know, supporting him, but also protecting the firm.
Yeah, of course. They have a business to run.
Exactly. And this is a partnership, so everybody's got a stake in it.
Right, right.
So there are some early attempts at intervention.
Okay.
There's actually a program outline from 1983.
Wow. A whole program.
Yeah. Basically laying out all the steps he needed to take to stay with the firm.
Oh, wow. Was that common back then? I mean...
It's hard to say without more context, but
yeah.
It definitely shows how seriously they were taking this whole thing.
Right. Makes you think about how different things were.
Totally. And there's this one line in the outline that honestly kind of sent chills down my spine when I read it.
Uh-oh. What is it?
It says, "There is no second chance."
Whoa. Okay.
I know, right?
That's intense.
Very different time. I don't know if compassion was really a big priority back then.
Right.
So big question is,
right,
how does Gerald respond to this?
Yeah. What happens next?
Well, he does try. He seeks treatment, tries to get back on track.
Okay, but for him.
But then
he relapses.
Oh, no.
And you can feel it in the documents.
Really?
Like, even though the firm gave him another shot, there's just this tension, you know? Like,
yeah.
The trust is gone.
Yeah.
Things are just not the same.
It makes sense, though, right? Like, on a human level, you can understand the firm trying to be understanding, but they have to protect their business, too.
Exactly. And they've got this partnership agreement you're talking about.
Right.
And it really spells out how they're supposed to work together.
Yeah.
Like, what are the rules, you know?
Okay.
And it's actually kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
They tracked partner contributions using this unit system.
Yeah. Units.
Yeah. It's almost like stock options, but for lawyers.
Oh, interesting. Like, the more units you have, the bigger your share.
Exactly.
So Gerald's struggles were actually directly tied to his earnings.
Oh, yeah. If he wasn't performing well, his units got reduced.
Oof.
Which probably added to all the financial pressure he was already under.
Yeah, I can only imagine.
So recipe for disaster, maybe?
Sounds like it. So what happens next? Does it get better? Or?
What's the 80s, right? So, of course, things escalate.
Okay, here we go.
We get to 1986, just a few years after that whole program outline thing, and the finance committee, they recommend that Gerald be severed from the firm.
Severed? Wow, that's harsh.
It gets worse. They actually went and removed files from his office.
Really? Talk about sending a message. Like, they were moving on without him.
Right. And you can imagine how Gerald felt.
Oh, betrayed, I'd say.
Exactly. He claimed the partnership totally breached their agreement.
Okay.
That they acted in bad faith. And get this.
What?
He accused them of having this predatory purpose.
Predatory.
Like, they just wanted him out to boost their own profits.
Wow. So it went from bad to worse to a full-blown legal battle.
Oh, yeah. It was a classic. He said, she said.
Yeah.
But with lawyers.
Of course. Of course. But it makes you think, but is it personal or just business?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right.
And that's what the court had to figure out.
So did Gerald get his day in court?
He did. This whole thing went to trial. All the dirty laundry aired out for everyone to see.
Okay, now we're talking. So the courtroom becomes the battleground for this whole partnership drama.
Exactly. And we'll find out who came out on top when we come back after a quick break.
Can't wait.
So we left off with this whole thing going to trial.
Right, big courtroom showdown.
High stakes, lots of drama. So what happened? Did Gerald's claims of betrayal and bad faith, did they hold up in court?
Well, this is where the legal stuff gets really interesting.
Okay.
The court really dug into everything.
Yeah.
The partnership agreement, all the firm's actions, Gerald's claims. And in the end, they actually sided with the partnership.
Wait, hold on. So the firm, the one that basically gave him that ultimatum and then kind of pushed him out,
Right.
they were in the right.
Legally, yeah. The court ruled that the expulsion, the way they kicked him out, it was all done in good faith, and that the firm was totally within their rights under that partnership agreement. We have to remember, partnerships, they're businesses. And sometimes businesses got to make tough decisions, even if they're hard on a personal level.
So it's like the court was saying, hey, business is business.
Kind of.
And we get that this is messy, but the firm followed the rules.
Right. They emphasize that whole due process thing,
Due process meaning.
meaning the firm had to follow the procedures, the steps laid out in that partnership agreement.
Okay.
And they did. They gave Gerald notice, a chance to respond. They dotted their I's and crossed their T's, legally speaking.
Okay, so no whim kicking out allowed.
Exactly, especially in a law firm. But Gerald, he was arguing that they had ulterior motives, right?
Hey, he said it was all about them making more money.
Yeah, that whole predatory purpose thing. He claimed they breached their fiduciary duty.
Now, what is that exactly?
So, fiduciary duty, that's a biggie in partnership law.
Okay.
Basically, it means partners have to act in each other's best interests. Got to be loyal, act in good faith, fair dealing, all that.
So how does the court square that with siding with the firm? It seems kind of contradictory.
Well, they looked at everything. All the evidence, the firm's attempts to help Gerald early on, the impact his alcoholism had on the business, all documented, and that they really did follow the agreement to a T.
So it's not that they just ignored Gerald's side.
No, they weighed everything,
Okay.
all the interests involved.
So it's more about applying the law fairly than just siding with the bigger guy, the firm.
Yeah, exactly. In this case, it really shows how important that partnership agreement is. Clear communication, everything spelled out. Because when things get emotional, like they did here, you need those guidelines to navigate the mess.
Absolutely. And you mentioned that unit system before.
Right, those lawyer stock options.
Did that come up in the court's decision?
Big time. The court totally upheld the firm's right to adjust those units based on performance, just like it said in the agreement. So as Gerald's struggles continued, his units got reduced. Court said that was totally fair game.
It's like a tough lesson in contracts, right?
Yeah, you sign on the dotted line, you got to play by the
A
rules.
court's gonna hold you to it.
Exactly. But I gotta say, I still kind of feel bad for Gerald. Like he got stuck in a system that maybe wasn't built to handle these personal issues. It's a valid point for sure. But the court, they had to focus on the legal side.
The contract, the evidence.
Yeah, and the law. And in their view, the firm, they were in the clear. But now, this is where it gets really interesting for me. Gerald, he didn't just give up.
He didn't.
Nope. He actually throws in this curveball claim.
Okay, hit me with it.
Constructive fraud.
Whoa, what's that now?
It's a fascinating legal idea.
Okay.
Basically, it means even if someone didn't intend to deceive,
Right.
their actions were so bad, so messed up,
Uh-huh.
that legally it's like they committed fraud anyway.
So Gerald's saying, even if the firm didn't set out to screw him over, the end result was the same.
Yeah, he's claiming they used their power to make themselves richer at his expense,
Wow.
took away his fair share of the profits.
That's a pretty bold move.
Yeah.
So did the court buy it? Did it work? Did that constructive fraud argument, did it actually get him anywhere?
It's a powerful tool for sure in the legal world, but it's really hard to prove. You gotta show those actions were so far out of line, you know? And in Gerald's case, the court just wasn't convinced. They went through everything, the firm's actions, those attempts to work with him early on, and they kept coming back to that partnership agreement. The firm stuck to it. No sneaky business, no deception, at least not legally speaking.
So even though Gerald felt wronged, the court's like, hey, we get it. But this wasn't some calculated scheme.
Yeah, exactly.
The firm was tough, but they were playing by the rules.
Right, and they had that right to adjust those units based on performance.
Yeah.
It was all right there in the contract.
It's like that contract is just looming over this whole case.
Totally. It's the foundation of their whole partnership.
So constructive fraud is a no-go.
Doesn't fly.
Did Gerald have anything else? Any other legal Hail Marys?
He did try one last thing.
Okay, lay it on me.
He claimed there was this whole other agreement.
Another one.
Yeah, but this one wasn't on paper.
Oh, so a verbal agreement, he said, she said situation.
Yep. Gerald said there was this side deal.
Yeah.
That if he got his act together, became a productive partner again, mm-hmm. he'd be back in good standing, fully restored.
Full reinstatement.
The whole nine yards.
It's like, come on, get it in writing.
Right. Classic lesson there.
Yeah, verbal agreements, those are so hard to prove.
Especially in a messy situation like this.
Right, all right.
But here's the thing. The court didn't even really have to get into whether this verbal agreement was real or not.
Why not?
They found a bigger problem.
Oh, interesting.
This whole thing about consideration.
Consideration. Legal jargon time.
Yeah, basically, for a contract, for an agreement to be valid, both sides got to bring something of value to the table.
Okay, like an exchange.
Yeah.
So what was Gerald offering?
That's what the court was asking, right? Yeah. What was he giving in exchange for this promise of being restored? And the court was like, well, he's already supposed to be a productive partner.
Oh, yeah, it's his job.
That's his duty.
So it's like he's saying, I'll do what I'm already supposed to do.
Yeah.
And in return, you give me extra stuff.
Doesn't really hold up, legally speaking.
Yeah, that's not a very compelling argument.
Not at all. And that was it for Gerald?
Case closed.
Case closed. The court dismissed his claim. No legal recourse against the firm.
Wow. What a journey. We started with this partnership dispute. Then it's betrayal, legal maneuvering, contract law. And now it's over.
Yeah. Quite a roller coaster ride through the 80s legal world.
So what are the takeaways here? What should our listeners be thinking about after this deep dive?
Oh, this case is full of lessons, not just for lawyers, but for anybody working with other people.
Yeah.
First off, get it in writing.
Always.
Contracts, agreements, spell it all out.
Don't rely on assumptions or good intentions.
Right. Because when things go sideways, that contract, that's your protection.
It's like that saying, good fences make good neighbors. But in this case, good contracts make good partnerships.
Exactly. But beyond the legal stuff, this case shows how important communication is.
Right.
Talk things out, set expectations, don't let problems fester.
Absolutely. And I think there's something to be said for adaptability too.
Oh, yeah.
Like Gerald, he was in a system that was changing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe he just couldn't keep up.
It happens. The legal world's always evolving, any field really.
Yeah.
Gotta be willing to learn, adapt.
Stay ahead of the curve.
Exactly. This whole deep dive, man, it's been fascinating.
So much drama, legal twists and turns.
Ethical questions, too.
Yeah. It
really makes you think.
Good time. So any last words of wisdom before we sign off?
I think at the end of the day, even with all the legal stuff, we can't forget the human side of things.
Right.
Relationships matter, communication matters, integrity matters.
Well said. We've all been in situations where work and personal life get tangled up.
Mm.
It's tough.
It is.
This case, it gives us a lot to think about.
Definitely.
So thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and always, always read the fine print.